She inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. This is Gina Murphy, darling, and welcome to Mrs. Green's World. Excuse me, an inspirational and informative place where we never tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we are certainly going to provide an opportunity for lots of thoughts to be shared, for things that you can take away and think about. So thank you again for joining us and for being a part of my world. A big thanks to the sponsor of this show, the Fairfax Companies. They are true leaders in the business of sustainability. Since its inception, the company has strived to be a leader in sustainability and is truly dedicated to improving the environment through creative and innovative management practices. Thank you, Fairfax, for your support of the Mrs. Green's World mission and vision, for all the work you do, and for the difference you make for the planet. I'm proud to have you as a sponsor of our journey. Now take a deep breath, everybody, and take time to think and quiet your mind and join me in welcoming Jessica Sweden. She's the co-founding trustee of Synchronicity Earth, a nonprofit that provides a framework for enlightened environmental giving globally. And Lord knows, do we ever need enlightened environmental giving these days? They have an ambitious vision. A sustainable planet that values the interconnectivity and interdependence of all living creatures. Because, folks, that's the story. That's the real deal. We are all interconnected. We are one planet. And everything that happens across the world happens here. Founded by Jessica and her husband, Adam, Synchronicity Earth has evolved into an organization that aspires to look at the whole conservation landscape, make sense of it, and spread the word so that ultimately they can ramp up funding for excellent projects. And one of the things that excites me the most about our guests and about their organization is they truly understand that without our environment intact, nothing else matters. It's where it all begins. It's where life begins. And they want very much to stay focused on this most urgent of tasks. So, Jessica, I think by that intro, you can tell I'm pretty excited to have you here today.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm delighted to be a part of this. It's the perfect place for us to be talking right now, I think.
I think you're right. And as people know, in our country and around the world, it was a dark day in our world yesterday. We're recording this on March 29th, and on March 28th, the powers that be in Washington, D.C. pretty much attacked every positive piece of legislation to protect us as citizens and to really and truly, I have a right to clean air, and I feel as though my rights were violated yesterday, and that it's such a it's a confusing experience because it doesn't serve anyone well except maybe the few greedy that will benefit from coal. But even coal is it's like people are closing coal plants, not because of legislation, but because it doesn't make financial sense anymore. So it's like, okay, it's a very confusing day. And what I'd like to do for this show is, because you have such a connected, integrated worldview and experience through your work with Synchronicity Earth, I'd just like to spend time with you and ask you questions to share your thoughts on on certain topics and what are some of the big red flags. And I think the first one to start with is great. You know, CO2 emissions. Help us understand the impact of carbon dioxide in the air. We're exceeding 400 parts per million in certain parts of the planet. So just talk about that a bit.
Okay. So my organization focuses mostly on biodiversity loss, but carbon dioxide emissions at this point in time, as you just said, are, you know, rapidly exceeding, and that's because of the human impact on our environment with regard to our energy use, our consumption. Most of these things we all seem to think that we all know, but of course, as we now know, many people don't actually buy into these to this thinking, even though all the science is in, and it's pretty obvious that, you know, we're having an incredible impact on the environment around us. And the problem with this kind of emissions is that what we're doing is, you know, glaciers are retreating almost everywhere, oceans are warming. You know, we're 30% more acidic in the oceans than they were pre-industrial times. Sea levels are rising. The Arctic summer ice has greatly declined. And all of this has a huge impact on everything that makes our entire Earth system cohesive. And we need these systems to be working together in the way that they've been created. You know, we need the oceans to be flowing healthily. We need the river systems to not be polluted by agricultural runoff and other pollutions from mining industries and things, so that we all have access to these incredible bounties that we have here on Earth. And, you know, I think it's really important to also look at these things within context of the fact that, you know, a lot of the troubles that we are facing right now from an environmental perspective are human-led. They are certainly the result of our impact on the world around us. And so I think we also have to realize that we have an inherent responsibility to right those wrongs. And so even though we're at the negative effect, and we're just beginning to understand what kind of implications these are going to have for us, we also can start to think about how we hold the Earth in terms of what is it that's important for us, and how are we going to continue to be in this world in the future, so that we have a much better chance of survival, not only for ourselves, but of course all of the life on Earth that we coexist with. And for me, that's kind of a crucial piece to it, because as I said before, you know, we are an organization that's focused on biodiversity, and biodiversity, of course, is all life on Earth. So everything from species, you know, plants, animals, fungi, invertebrates, flying creatures, everything, and, you know, and all of the different planktons and things that we coexist with. Every element, all of this life on Earth plays an important function, some of which we understand, some of which we really don't understand. And that biodiversity is disappearing at a rapid rate. I often say I'm 46 years old, and we've lost 50% of life on Earth in my lifetime. And I'm, you know, personally not okay with that, which is why one of the reasons why we started the organization in the first place. But with that rapid decline, you know, which is much higher than sort of natural extinction rates, we're basically unfurling this, you know, we're unknitting this incredible cohesion that we have on Earth. And we have an enormous responsibility, I believe, to do something about that. The biodiversity, in fact, is one of the most important mitigators against climate change and against the carbon, because it is, in fact, carbon. So we need to, you know, really think about our future, the ways that we're, our needs, what we want to take with us, what we can let go of, and how to approach it. So, you know, for me, we're not focused specifically on carbon. It's not our primary goal. We are at the end result of it with things like, you know, green energy, looking at new solutions in terms of what's possible, and actually how a lot of the so-called green energies, things like hydropower dams, are actually not as positive as we think that they might be, and how they affect freshwater ecosystems and things like that. So I guess the whole kind of notion around carbon, climate change, biodiversity loss, all of these issues is about how we start to think in a much more holistic frame of mind about the interrelationship between all of these different elements and the, you know, the long-term results of how we act on a regular basis. And I think that's kind of the core of what we're interested in as an organization.
And given the history, I mean, you're getting closer to 20 years old, which means you started when you were like 10. It's like, she's 46.
That's a little bit of an exaggeration.
Oh my gosh, but you were thinking about it in your evolution a lot sooner than I was. Kind of what I read in the research is that you had this wonderful vision and you were inspired to not just have the vision, but to act on it. And you started seeing patterns emerge. This is one of those patterns that it troubles you, and it is it just focuses a laser sharp focus on the interconnectivity that you talked about, because with CO2 emissions, species are going to disappear as they rise. I mean, so the biodiversity issue again is front and center. And I know that it's not your, you know, your major area of focus, but you do have a worldview. You do interact with world leaders all of the time. So what about, you know, from where I sit, I believe that America was leading the charge with COP21 and all of the agreements that were signed. We recognized as intelligent leaders that CO2 emissions were harmful, period, to everyone. Nobody's exempt. And so we led the charge up to the point where I believe that CO2 emissions actually leveled off in 2016. That was from the Climate Reality Project with Al Gore. Well, that's, you know, kiss that goodbye as much as I really want to remain positive and upbeat, but I also want to be real. So what will happen now? Will countries like China, which has done a total about face in terms of implementing aggressive, massive solar installation, and India, I mean, they're turning into world leaders instead of world polluters. What's your worldview on, can what they do help mitigate what may happen in the future with the United States, not as world leaders?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think they can. It's, to be honest, it's a really interesting perspective to be an American, well, British-born American, grown up, living in London for the last 20 years or so. And, you know, I have a very interesting perspective on the United States, which I, of course, adore and love. But I also, you know, one of the things that becomes very clear the moment you step out of it for any length of time is that, you know, it's very focused on its own perspective. And so I think when you say worldview, you know, was it a leader in the climate charge? From the global perspective, no, not so much. Definitely not. I mean, you know, it was late to the table. It definitely had different pieces that it was kind of puzzling together when, you know, new treaties were signed and marine protected reserves were created and Arctic refuge and, you know, some amazing, you know, transformational pieces of legislation that. But it was, you know, it was a little bit too late in a way. All good stuff, and I would. By, you know, for sure change it. I would if we could keep that right now, we'd be much better off.
You're
than
so
where
right.
We were
That's looking a lot better than it was. And thank you for that. You're so right. We were late to the party. We were brought there kicking and screaming. And I want to not paint a rosy picture of where we were in that charge. Yeah. But maybe it is looking at what I saw yesterday as opposed to.
Right, and it's also because you're enlightened and you think about these things.
Yes.
So you've been thinking about them for a very long period of time. Others are only just beginning to even consider them, and some aren't even, they're just ignoring them outright. So I think the bigger issue that we can start, you know, that we can start to think about a little bit is, you know, these things, you know, he who shall not be named didn't just emerge from, you know, the depths of hell. I mean, we can think that maybe he did, but, you know, to be honest, you know, he came from somewhere, and where he came from was actually, you know, created in the United States of America, right? A, you know, truly capitalistic, very power-hungry, jobs-oriented, you know, self-profit-driven, you know, an increasingly sort of narcissistic worldview, which sounds kind of like a you know, an opposition in a way, but, you know, really a self, so about the self, about, you know, how does everything benefit me? And I think that is sort of the crux of where, you know, of the heart of all of these issues that we're facing, whether it's in politics, the environment, you know, what we're facing with regard to the way that the world does or does not care for, you know, the rest of Earth that we live with. It's about the fact that we're not considering ourselves within a larger context. And I think the United States hasn't for a very long time considered itself within a larger context. And that therein lie part of the problem. So where will it, I think leaders like, I think China will be hugely influential to the United States at a certain point in time. You know, it hopefully it won't be when all else is gone and, you know, it's the last possibility. But I do think that as other leaders continue to progress in their thinking and in their evolution, you know, at some point in time, business will, you know, even if business is the leading paradigm, which it will probably still continue to be for some time, it will lead people towards the environment. You know, I'm telling young people these days that, you know, if you want to get a job in the future when you graduate from college, if you're already thinking about the environment, if you embed that into everything that you do, you're going to be successful because there is no doubt in my mind that we have to consider the environment in everything that we do.
Everything. And, you know, your conversation with me is so helpful to me personally because I show up in the world every day, hopefully leading the Mrs. Green's World Charge and having a voice for the people whose lives we touch. And the thing that we have to remember, and you helped me remember it, is each one of us has individual choice and individual responsibility. And you can see evidence of it. We had the very wonderful march. And what I talked to so many women around the country, because I've been traveling a bit, and women from 5 years old, young girls, to women in their 70s and 80s, especially the older population, the pride and the joy on their faces.
Yeah.
It was my first march. I marched.
Yeah.
And every day we make choices. Every day we choose the vehicle we drive, what we're going to consume, how much we're going to consume. So a thread for this can definitely be, we didn't give up all of our rights as citizens yesterday, and our voices not lost. It's like,
in fact,
get louder.
It's the opposite.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
I mean, that's actually, you know, in a very perverse way, you know, with my outside looking in perspective, you know, one could easily argue that this is the best thing that's ever happened to the environment.
Wake up, America.
Because it's actually put it on the table.
Yes.
I mean, it's actually made people go, oh my God, are you kidding me? You know, so actually people are starting to step up and they're realizing that if they don't do something, you know, it's finally they're recognizing it in relationship to themselves and that they do have that voice and that actually activating that voice makes them feel very positive and puts that smile on their face. And even though they're fighting a battle they'd rather not be fighting, there's a joy that comes out of the process through which when you're activating that part of yourself.
Yeah, it's an awakening.
It's an awakening. It's an emergence, you know, and this is a state of emergency, and we have to emerge into another version of ourselves. And so this is where hope comes from. So while it feels terrible, you know, it's actually, it's because it's this kind of very complex, mired transition that we're living in at the moment. And we have to be forthright. We have to use voices and the parts of ourselves that we didn't even know we had. And we have to move, and we have to activate, and then we have to, you know, keep plugging along and find other people who believe in what we're doing, who can stand by you so that you've got, you know, a community of voices. And so for me, you know, there is an emergence that is taking place, and that's why, perhaps in one way why I can stay positive, because I'm actually starting to see people. The conversations are starting to take place, and you know, even a year before, these conversations were not happening as regularly as I'm now seeing them.
And when you have, like, I watch the BBC news because at least it gives a little bit more of a worldview.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, oh, that happened. I didn't see that on any of our news feeds.
Yeah.
Like, well, there is a worldview here, and I think it's one of the sad parts to me is that this posturing, which a lot of it is, when you talk about coal in particular, coal mining, the life expectancy for coal miners is much shorter, 58 years. The people that live in those communities and coal miners themselves suffer from dreadful, awful diseases. higher incidence of every kind of cancer, kidney cancer, liver cancer, bladder cancer. So this wasn't a gift to them either. The gift would have been getting them to retrain and have jobs that will support their families that don't kill them and make them sick and pollute the environment. So we are up on our first break, which is the never-ending shock to me and Mrs. Green's world. So we will be right back. We have lots more to talk about. We'll start with feeding our growing population with Jessica Sweden. We'll be right back, everybody.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and Speak Up networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thanks so much for being with us. Joining us for this hour is Jessica Sweden. She is the co-founding trustee of Synchronicity Earth, a nonprofit that provides a framework for enlightened environmental giving globally, giving and sharing and involving and engaging many more things than just that. They have an ambitious vision, a sustainable planet. Imagine that. I mean, I'm sounding a little bit sarcastic today. I need to like rein that in, but a sustainable planet. Oh, a world that works for everyone. Wow.
Yeah, well, it's a vision, right?
It
we
is
have
a vision.
To have a vision that we aspire to.
Yeah.
We have to be able to dream and
really
to push
do.
Towards something.
And you value things like interconnectivity and interdependence of all living creatures. And all of your work does support that vision. And what I want to say from a very personal level is that your being with me today and your very important mission shines light on the importance of the value that Mrs. Green's World and our incredible team brings to the world. Because we're spreading the word about people like you, and there are lots of people like me looking for that shred of hope today, or that little piece of light or something that sparks inside of them a desire to be a part of the much needed change here and around the world. So thank you from me.
Oh, well, it's my absolute pleasure.
So
thank you for having me.
It's so great. And speaking of chronic myopia, boy, I am a little bit out of control today, but we don't read much here in the United States about the fact that it's like, and how could I even say anything lightly, because it is truly upsetting to me. And in our family, I'm going to start looking for what we can do to make a difference. But feeding our growing population, which, you know, the sad thing is there, it's soon to be not as much a growing population. Just let's talk about Africa. The drought conditions there are beyond my comprehension, and I'm sure the comprehension of many. It does not make daily headlines. You can find it sometimes on a news feed. But according to the reports that I've read, it's millions of people that are already starving, and the number has been reported to be as high as 37 million in some of the articles I read, at risk or starving right this moment.
Yeah.
So where are we with your global view, and where do we need to be? Talk to us about growing population and how we're going to feed them.
Yeah. So Africa and what you're describing now in terms of you know, the droughts and the poverty are an incredible example, which is a hard thing to say, you know, because of what's going on there, but really where all of these different issues and threats and kind of the whole sort of space around philanthropy and what our different interests are, where it all kind of comes together in Africa. And, you know, the droughts are for sure a result of climate change. You know, they do have droughts in Africa on regular basis, but this kind of extended the level of this.
Right, the severity.
the severity of it is, of course, related to the climate change, the fact that we don't have access to fresh river systems anymore, and the fact that there's never really been, you know, these incredible, well, first of all, the people are totally impoverished, right? And there's this lack of resource. Now, the thing that we have to think about is the fact that actually there isn't a lack of resource. It's about where our resources are being used.
Exactly, especially in Africa. They take everything of value out and sell it.
Out, and it all goes out. So it all goes out and gets sold. We mine it until there's nothing left. I mean, we've created wastelands, and we are all implicit or complicit with that. You know, we have all, with our iPhones and with our computers and with everything that we use, we are all equally responsible for the damage that is done in places like Africa. We just don't often think about it that way. And so one of the things that's quite interesting to me with regard to places like Africa, and we're starting to develop an extensive Congo Basin strategy, is the fact that all of, you know, we have to think about how the mining issues are related to the poverty, which is also related to the way that women and girls are treated or not treated, and how that those conflict zones end up becoming these areas where there's, you know, they're in dire straits, there's very little hope, and immediately what happens is we have campaigns and people rushing in from the development community and the human rights community and, you know, the different aid organizations saying, give this money to support this. And that's all well and good. But if we could start to think about it at a slightly more deeper level about how it all interrelates ultimately to the lack of resource and where that resource is actually going, to your point, and how we can reconfigure that cycle of resource use and extraction. You know, many, many people that I've spoken to in the past have said there's no shortage of available food. We could feed the population as it stands and as it grows. If the Western world changes its diet slightly and we stop feeding our, you know, large agricultural businesses, cows and chickens and pigs, a lot of the feed that we're producing for them and not
yes,
for human beings.
They're the ones getting fed
yeah.
so that we can eat beef, which causes methane gas, which causes an acceleration of climate change.
Well, and it's not
There's
healthy.
The intercon-
so,
I mean,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
yeah.
So, I mean, this is where the interconnection point is absolutely right there. You know, you've got health meeting, you know, food production meeting, you know, all of these issues related to environmental degradation. And, you know, but we all get quite sort of stuck in our boxes in the way that we think about things. We get blinded in terms of our approaches and our views. And it's very easy to say, well, I'm an expert in agriculture, and this is how I think about things. You know, but actually, are you thinking about how that interrelates to the rest of the system that you happen to be involved in? And generally, the answer is no.
And the big red flag for me is when anyone starts out with a sentence, and I am an expert in, I admit, I get a little biology. I'm like, really? Okay. Well, I'm certainly going to listen to what you have to say, because usually experts talk from their place of knowledge and don't state that they're an expert.
Yeah.
So be watching out for that one. And let's go back for a minute to your comment about in this whole interconnectivity globally. Why is it so important to educate girls? I've talked about it on my show before, but it certainly merits revisiting. Why does that help impact poverty and our growing population and feeding the world's starving population? Mm-hmm. Educate girls, hashtag educate girls. It's an answer.
Well, exactly. And for me, and I'll say what I think in a second. I mean, but, you know, I know so many women who are involved in education of girl programs, whether in India or Africa or South America, wherever. And they all know this, right? But what they're still not thinking about is how that is, if you take it one step deeper, how it's also totally interconnected to the environment within which those girls are living. And so if they weren't living on a mine where we're extracting coltan for our telephones, then there would be a very different experience taking place. So for me, girls are, they're the center of the communities. So they're also, they're the, you know, we are they are the ones that are kind of holding the fort in terms of all the communities in terms of the men are often going off and working in their different jobs and coming back. They're obviously in charge. They have control of their bodies, or should do, in terms of whether or not they're going to be reproducing. And, you know, it's about them having a context that they're otherwise not given in order to think about how they, what their choices are in life, and what their future might look like, and how, if they can work together as a community of women, how they can, you know, be a much stronger force. And, you know, they know everything that's going on.
They sure
they're women.
Do.
They're girls.
And they're smart.
They're intuitive. And they're smart. So a lot of the programs that we support, even agroecology programs, where it's, you know, looking at holistic indigenous forms of agriculture in positive biodiverse ecological areas, a lot of them are run by women, because they are wanting to work. They believe in their community. They have a long-term vision in terms of how they can see that change. They work as a community. They uplift one another, and they're staying home. And so they know what their needs are, and they work for a long-term vision. They're not just, you know, hand-to-mouth, and I think that makes a big difference.
And it's, it's the natural order of things. We are the nurturers and the caretakers, and the beat goes on. And one of the things that I love about the research that you provided and the talking points for consideration, I actually like facts, you know, just call me crazy, but I do. And you sent me information that says we have cultivated a quarter of the Earth's terrestrial surface, which means one-fourth of the land has been cultivated, and that in order to feed our growing population, this will need to increase by 70%. And first of all, since you know about American conversations, we have a better chance of seeing Elvis than that happens. So let's just be honest here. Okay, 70%. Sure. And there's Elvis going down Main Street. And even if we did that, which we will not, and you and I both know it, this will only reduce the developing world's undernourished to 4% by 2050.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a staggering stop dead in your tracks if you are a thinking human being, consciously living for even for nanoseconds. Folks, it's like we've got a big problem that is severely impacting. People are dying, and we can feed them. I mean, that's the part that kills me.
Yeah.
We could feed them.
It is. Yeah, we can totally feed them. You know, I have got some great friends at Compassion and World Farming who, you know, they can tell you exactly what we need to do in terms of how to change our approach to solve these problems. It's just the fact that we, again, you know, we are living in an incredibly self-oriented, self-actualized, world where we have been, you know, brought up in the Western world to think about ourselves and about, you know, progress meaning affluence, meaning how am I going to do better in my life and become an expert in something so that I can be so that I can hold my ground and get paid a certain amount so that I can then go and achieve what I think is, you know, societally acceptable.
Right. We have arrived. Our house is bigger. Our car is bigger. We have more than one of them.
Yeah.
I have more shoes. I mean, the beat goes on. And I grew up in the generation my parents were post-Depression. So guess what? Gina and James wanted the bigger house, the bigger car.
Yeah.
And now we
that
are
was the model.
Yes, it was. It's like that means we're happy and successful. And of course, anybody who does any research knows money and happiness are not necessarily interconnected. Do we think the president of the United States looks happy these days?
We don't know if he ever did, but
that's true. But now I have to see his face more, so it's very troubling to me.
Yeah.
I want to ask you if you've seen the movie Poverty Inc.
Because I have not, no.
And I highly recommend it because you touched on it. What Poverty Inc. is about is a very kind and loving but very honest reflection on how Westerners in general react to world crises and quote-unquote ending poverty. And it is a model that has successfully failed over and over again, over and over and over. And the message of the movie is the only way to end poverty is to get people out of poverty. It's not by giving them rice and killing all the rice farming in Haiti. It's not by providing them free shoes so that every cobbler in an entire country no longer can make shoes because they're all getting free shoes. It's like, that is not the answer. And it is a kind solution immediately. But long term, it's not.
It's a Band-Aid,
It's a Band-Aid. It's a Band-Aid. So that movie is something that I, you know, I have a Movies with Meaning night and invited a bunch of friends from one of my client groups, a green team, and it was profound, the things that it made us think about. It makes you think more deeply, and it didn't blame us. It wasn't like, oh, you know, you dumb Westerners that are sending us 60 T-shirts from your drawer. It was about, that's good, thank you, but here's what we really need. We need to help develop our solar companies. We need to, you know, really give educate women and girls and give them a craft or a skill or something to sell so that they get out of poverty. So, and you spoke to that. It's what made me remember the movie. And, okay, let's go on to a topic that kind of surprised me, but this is what I love about my journey. And it's wonderful because it does highlight the interconnectivity. I'm like, mangrove forests, what? And then, of course, what I do is go down the rabbit hole of research, and it's like, huh, wow, who's thinking of mangrove forests when they woke up today? And it's it's like, it's kind of funny, but it's kind of not, because it is that, you know, that blessed bliss of myopia. It doesn't matter. What is a mangrove forest anyway? But it does matter. So talk to us about why that showed up on your radar enough to say, you know, Gina, let's talk about this.
Well, I mean, mangroves are those wonderfully kind of interesting looking trees that are right on the coastlines, or should be right on the coastlines, that are, that hold our coasts together. You know, they have these incredible root systems. And in fact, when I was in Mozambique, Madagascar, where was I? I wasn't in either of those places.
I don't know, but I wasn't with you, so we can't talk about it.
I was in Mauritius, because we do projects in all those places, and I just jumped the gun. I was in Mauritius recently, and we actually went and snorkeled in the mangrove forest, which was kind of cool, because you see a whole, it's kind of murky, but you see a whole different ecosystem. And mangroves are these incredible systems that hold our coastlines together. But what happens is, of course, with industry, with wanting to build beautiful hotels, and with things like wanting to eat shrimp whenever we want to, we end up putting, we cut down our mangrove forests and we put in shrimp farms, and we lose our coastal buffer systems. So when things around climate change happen and our storm systems get bigger, and, you know, we have crazy weather patterns, all of a sudden what you start to notice is that we increasingly have, and of course we've got many examples in the past couple of years in the Philippines, even in Florida, you know, obviously Sandy and in New Jersey, et cetera, where we have lessened our resilience to being able to handle severe weather patterns on the coasts. And mangroves play a really important part of that. And we've lost about 35% of them in the last few decades, and that's mostly due to shrimp farming. And that's typically in Southeast Asia. But they're absolutely crucial. So it's, again, it's one of these things, like, you know, you say, it's who's ever heard of a mangrove forest, you know, but there are these overlooked key elements that we require for a healthy whole ecosystem on Earth. And when we, you know, at Synchronicity Earth, what we try to do is look for the gaps. So we're very interested in what isn't being done as much as we are interested in what is being done. And so for us, with biodiversity as a key frame in terms of everything that we're supporting or doing, we, you know, we're looking at where funding is going, where it's not going. And the mangroves, you know, they made themselves apparent to us. So we've got some different programs that we're working on with different projects in different areas that are helping to let the, you know, get rid of the shrimp farms and let those systems grow back.
And I think it again, it highlights the whole the thought process of people do understand we are a food chain. The next deeper thought is when there is an interruption in that food chain or a disappearance in that food chain, it does think dominoes, people. There's a domino effect. And you might think, oh, well, people won't be able to eat shrimp. That is so not the case. It's an oversimplification. What it's doing is interrupting the whole cycle of the earth and of life. So another break right now. And when we come back, we have more cheerful topics to talk about. And you are giving me hope. You really are. So we'll be right back. To know better is to do better. We'll be right back. More from Jessica Swaden.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thank you for being a part of it. We are spending this hour with Jessica Swaden, who is the co-founding trustee of Synchronicity Earth. How serendipitous, see Synchronicity Earth and serendipity. It is a nonprofit that provides a framework for enlightened environmental giving, among other things. That's a piece of it, but very, very important projects that come about as a result of that vision. Jessica, her husband Adam, and their remarkable team are driven by the urgent need to scale up the impact of conservation given the pace of environmental degradation, which just got worse yesterday. This not only means bringing more funding in and directing it towards effective projects, but building broad coalitions, ever increasingly important, and encouraging the sharing of ideas between people from different walks of life. And Jessica, you can hear it in my voice. You can feel it in my heart. My gratitude for your being with us on this day to inspire me and everybody that listens to this about your great work and about finding our voices and, you know, pumping up the volume.
All right. Well, I love talking about all of these things all the time, so I'm absolutely delighted to be a part of this. Thank you for having me.
Me too. I'm kind of limited in, like, I think my friendship circle is shrinking a little. It's like, okay, you know what she's going to talk about, but most of my friends actually want to know and ask me, and I'm kind of the gateway for them.
Yeah.
For lots of really wonderful things. So let's talk about tropical forests, because I'd like to know, how do we even begin to measure the impact of deforestation of our tropical forests and what's been lost in the last century, which, of course, we'll never recover from that, let's be honest. And just let's talk with the size, what's happened in Greenland. Let's go on this path, and then what can we do?
Well, I mean, forests, it's one of the most important issues that people recognize immediately. I think it was, you know, as far as environmental issues and threats have been concerned, people seem to be aware of, you know, they think of Brazil, they think of Amazon, they think of what's been happening in terms of deforestation. It's not getting better anytime soon. We have, between what we've taken out for firewood and for clearing just for wood and for furniture and everything else, logging and timber, and now increasingly just literally taking the forest out for things like oil palm, which is a very fast-growing crop, which, you know, I don't know how many people these days anymore know about it or not know about it, but, you know, oil palm or palm oil, as some have heard of, is in virtually everything from cosmetics to peanut butter to shampoos and a lot of other ingredients that we use on a regular basis. And it is such a lucrative commodity that we actually value it much higher than we do our standing forests. And so what's happened is we've lost huge swaths of primary forest. And primary forest is really important because, you know, they're the deep, deep old root systems and the big trees that clean our air and give us oxygen, which is kind of an important thing, the ability to breathe every other breath, right?
That's
exactly. Well
that's kind
said.
Of important.
Good job. You know that. Not many people know that it's every other breath, so I'm impressed by that.
without that, we'll think about the oceans. We do with those other breaths that we need in between? I mean, it's like so real and so. You know, we laugh, but it's like, people, do you understand? It is the very air we breathe. Where do you think that comes from?
Exactly.
Not New Jersey.
But, you know, since the Industrial Revolution, we've lost, you know, 32% of our global forest cover. And deforestation is accelerating, and it isn't really stopping. We've had some winds and some things that's where we feel as though, you know, the global conservation community, we're stopping the kind of the force of it. But ultimately, well, I mean, at the moment, it's, you know, we're losing forest. There isn't that much more to destroy, primary intact forest. I say that, and actually the Congo Basin is one of the most important remaining intact forests, which is why I mentioned earlier in this show that we have a particular interest in it, because it's one of the most important areas for biodiversity. It's a conflict zone, so it is very complicated, and it involves absolutely everything that we've been talking about so far. But it has a very critical intact forest that needs protecting. And you know, the oil palm industry wants to come in and devastate it, like it has done in Indonesia. In lots of parts of South America and other parts of Africa, like Liberia. And, you know, that effectively is the grease that fuels much of our consumption.
And palm oil is a cheap filler.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new phenomenon. It's like, in my lifetime, we got to see how, let's do this. It's so cheap. We can put it in everything. It's the devil.
And it binds. Yeah. It binds everything.
Yeah.
So it makes your peanut butter not runny. So we like that better.
Right. Instead of when you get natural peanut butter, you have to like stir it up. Oh, God forbid that extra step. We don't want that. It's not instantaneous.
Exactly.
So, and again, it's like the journey of Mrs. Green began deep in the rainforest in Peru when a lot of this was revealed to me in various ways by the people I spent time with, by just being and seeing and being quiet and observing. And I've shared this story many times with people. What was so devastating to me was, yes, the clear cutting of the forest. In many cases, the trees were burned. They weren't even being shipped off to make someone expensive furniture in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It was slash and burn. And seeing families sit on the barren land in the rain, and all there is erosion.
Flooding.
Yes, flooding. And
that's what's happening in Peru right now, right?
Yes, so, yes. Yeah. And it's that, you know, let's talk about it. Hashtag interconnectivity, people. This is the whole thing.
Yeah.
We're part of a global system. So the rainforest, and I say there's a lot of topics we've covered already and several more I hope we get to, but pick your passion and decide this is the one.
Yeah.
And if you're capable of having three, go after those. Spread the word. Put things on your Facebook page. Talk to friends. Have movies that matter night. There are things we can do, and it will, in fact, help always. So don't be in that hopeless state I was in when I woke up this morning. It's like there are things that we can do. And it's okay. So take a deep breath. Okay, let's go right on to the wetlands, another very cheerful topic. We've lost 50%.
These should be the most cheerful things we could possibly talk about.
Yes.
I mean, what gives us more joy than being outside under a canopy of trees or swimming with a coral reef or
nothing
or in a coral reef or going out to the wetlands and seeing thousands of birds flying and coming and going. I mean, seriously, what gives us more joy than those things? And yet, you know, we're destroying them at rampant paces. And so the wetlands, you know, we've lost 50% in some regions. It's 95%. And it's our river systems. You know, rivers don't even make up that large a part of our world. It's about 2%. And they're almost gone. And, you know, from our perspective, we are looking at these things, of course, again, from a biodiversity lens. But with rivers and freshwater systems, we can't help but then immediately link that to human consumption,
right,
and what people need in terms of access to fresh water. What we forget to think about is the fact that our freshwater systems are cleaned by the biodiversity that's in them, and we've lost 80% of 80% of people are exposed to high levels of water security, and we've lost so much of the species and the biodiversity within the river systems. And that is in large part due to our search now for things like green energy with regard to hydropower dams, which aren't as green as we hope that they might be, because they don't alleviate the flows of the water through, and so they block certain areas of the waterway, and then it kind of kills the migration of different species. But this receives the least amount of attention. The wetlands are by far kind of the, I mean, it's extraordinary. We've got an advisor, this lovely guy, and he, you know, he's so happy that we exist
because we're one of the few
organizations that care, you know, that we're actually saying, oh, we want to support fresh water. We want to try to ramp it up. We want to try to get more people interested. And he said, you do? You know, it's sort of, he can't believe that, you know, it's, you know, I'm exaggerating, but it's sort of, nobody thinks about it from this perspective. And we have to be thinking about it from these perspectives.
And it goes back to what Synchronicity Earth does. I mean, you find people like this who are high-level thinkers doing important work, and then you find ways to support their work. You do, in fact, support their work. So it's, you know, I was so eager to get through to all of the important, you know, the worldview. We're hungry for that perspective that, you know, Synchronicity Earth, the understanding here is you do find these people and these causes and then support them and shed the light on them to every influential circle in which you operate. I mean, that's huge. So I think that, you know, we have to remember that your mission and vision is all about solutions and you know, kind of amplifying the problem first, because hopefully for most people, to know better is to do better. Not always the case, but for people that listen to Mrs. Green's World, that is always the case. They want to know better and they want to do better. So, again, you talk about, the world rivers are severely fragmented by dams and reservoirs, and then the chain continues, pollution and the effects that has on inland fisheries, food supplies, and people's jobs and their recreation and their joy. I mean, it's, let's care. Even sportsmen, a lot of sportsmen that I know care deeply about the planet because they want to be a part of, they want to hunt, they want to fish, and they want to do it responsibly. So that's another good part. You know, I just want to, I'm going to deviate usually from my normal. I have topics that I would love to continue to talk about, and I think we have about 7 minutes left, which defies description in my time warp here. But, you know, there are the coral reefs, there are oceans, like where to begin, and then, you know, animals, plants, that goes on. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about the International Union for Conservation of Nature. And then the thing I really want to get to is, there's a part on your website that is actually entitled Deeper Thinking. And this is a first for me. So it drew me. And I went on there and it's like, it drew me in again and again. So I'd love to be able to cover that. So which would you like to go with? And before we run out of time and I'm hurrying up and saying goodbye, I want to invite all of our listeners to go to this amazing, beautiful, wonderful, soothing website called synchronicityearth.org and Facebook Synchronicity Earth, And then Jessica has her own Twitter handle. And I was reading it a couple times. It's Red Orange Earth. And I was saying, redo, No, it's like
Red Orange Earth.
It came to me, Red Orange Earth. And then
my
there
two
is,
colors.
Yes.
Earth,
I love it. And then at Sync Earth, S-Y-N-C-H Earth.
Thank you.
So we need to really make sure people can do that, follow, retweet, stay engaged. I think it's really important. So
thank you.
Do you want to segue? Maybe we could cover oceans and deep thinking. That would be my dream.
Okay. Well, I mean, oceans, you know, we've got serious problems, of
course. Yeah, they kind of matter.
They do kind of matter. They're absolutely vital. We've got major plastic pollution issues. We've got parts of our oceans that are dead because there's literally no life left in them. There's been it's been taken out of them. We've got sort of unprotected areas in the things called the high and the deep seas, where we work quite significantly to try to get legislation into these sort of no man land areas that are that are beyond jurisdiction. We've got a major issue around fishing and overfishing and trawling, and I'm sure many people have seen the images and the videos where, you know, these huge, huge, huge trawlers come and take no mercy, take whatever they take out of the ocean, and now we have systems where we vacuum fish out of the sea. So, I mean, we are destructive beyond all compare. And in the oceans, you know, as you said earlier, we do get our second breath from our oceans. A lot of people don't know that. And we have a lot of work to do, and a lot of that has to do with, again, our pollution, our plastic. And here's the one which boggles my mind, the fact that we might have fishless oceans by 2050. I mean, that's, you know,
it's just mind-boggling. Fishless oceans. And when we're talking about connect that with me, make sure you know where your fish comes from, and then question should be eating. And of course, Sylvia Earle would say, don't eat fish, period. Don't eat fish.
Of course. I mean, and back to the shrimp thing, you know, it's sort of, when I was little, fish was a treat, you know, or shrimp, my God, maybe once or twice a year, possibly.
Right.
You know, it's not in your, you know, and I live in central London, you know, I can buy sushi at about six places within a 3-minute walking distance from my house. That's not how it's meant to be. It's meant to be a delicacy. But we take everything when we want it, we take it to another level, and, you know, and then we, until there's nothing left, and then we move on to the next thing. And that is a very dangerous way and approach to continue our lives. And we have all the warning signs. We just can't ignore them anymore.
And that one, when you say that, it's like fishless oceans. Okay, I'm getting the 3-minute warning and, here. So it's like, what? there's not enough time. And some people say, well, a 1-hour show is kind of long. And I'm saying, really? I'm thinking about going to 1.5 hours because the guests I have a lot to say. It's like, and we all have a lot to learn.
Well, we can do a follow-up.
We can do a follow-up show. We will indeed do a follow-up show. Let's go. People can go and look about the International Union for Conservation of Nature.
Yeah.
I encourage everybody to do that.
Yeah.
They're doing very important work. It talks about how you can become a member. And I was going to say, is the United States even a member anymore once they find out about that?
We don't know. I mean, that will be interesting.
Yeah, it will be interesting.
I mean, the IUCN, I can say very quickly, is one of the most important global conservation. In fact, it's the oldest conservation organization. And it is effectively the UN for conservation. So most conservation organizations are members. And it's a place and a facility for everybody to get aligned in their thinking and then to implement much greater in larger plans and work together on a much larger scale. And as Sylvia Earle, who you just mentioned a moment ago, has said to me, you know, if we didn't have the IUCN, we would be creating it because that function, it has a seat on the UN. It can't vote, but it certainly implements a huge amount of policy. So from that perspective, it's vital. And, you know, we're very lucky to be patrons for the IUCN and spend a lot of time sort of thinking quite high level about how to, you know, to showcase this important institution.
And that's, I'm really glad that we did cover that because it is really, really, really important.
Yeah.
And so I think that we, on our next part two, we can go into the whole deeper thinking piece of it because that is what this requires. And I invite people, and I've got to hurry up and say this. I'm not attacking Republicans in my conversations. I know very many caring, thinking Republicans who care about the planet. This isn't a political issue in terms of Democrats versus Republican. People would like us to think that, but there mm-hmm. are people, let's rise up
it
together.
Shouldn't be politi-
it shouldn't,
well, it shouldn't be political.
It's not.
It's the environment. It's not political.
It's not
it
political.
Became political, but it shouldn't
right.
be political.
Let's take it out of the political realm and get it into the realm of action and caring and making a difference. Jessica, thank you so much again for showing up. And you can go to my website to look up for upcoming shows. Make it a great green, intentionally lived, and very awake day. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.